Motivation. Good afternoon to you. I'm Kara Hetland. And Diane Suvain is professor of computer science and an adjunct professor of mathematics at Tufts University, also chair of the National Science Board, which is the governing body of the National Science Foundation. Diane Suvain is the keynote speaker for the 2019 Research Symposium at Dakota State University and joins us now from Massachusetts. Diane Suvain, thanks so much for being on Innovation.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
And you are coming to South Dakota next week to speak with students and really talking a little bit about your research and about STEM in general. Is that right?
A cross-section. You know, broadly, I plan to talk about the fact that no matter what our field of research is, we're all contributing to that larger fabric of knowledge, discovery, and innovation that our country needs.
So let's start and talk a little bit about STEM in general. Where are we in the United States? This has really been a push in the last decade or so to really improve STEM education in the United States. Have we achieved?
Well, I think we've made gains, but there's much, much more to do, right? I think that certainly the National Science Foundation is very interested in supporting research in all 50 states and all U.S. territories and creating the next generation of science and knowledge that we need to thrive in this economy. But that has many components to it. We need to strengthen America's workforce, certainly. We need innovative, evidence-based approaches that teach students from elementary to graduate level the skills such as computer programming and computational thinking that we'll need in the new knowledge base of the world going forward. And we need to recruit and retain women, minorities, persons of disabilities, lots of people into STEM that may not have been there in the same proportions as we need going forward.
How did you choose computer science and mathematics as your profession?
Well, that's a little bit of a funny story. I think when I was an undergraduate, I did a double concentration in math and English. Fields that may not have sounded as related as you might think. Mm-hmm. And then when I graduated from college, I had a lot of debt, but it was the old-fashioned National Student Defense loans that were forgiven at a rate of 10% a year for up to 50% if you did pre-college teaching. So I taught both math and English in high school for a while and then did a summer master's program in which I really fell in love with computing.
So having that high school teaching experience and now your college teaching experience, are we preparing students at that younger age to make that transition and to take those steps and into STEM professions?
I think that we're making headway, but I think there's so much more we can do. I certainly want to see the right exposure, the engaging and exciting exposure to computational thinking, to technological thinking, to math and science, to be there across the board for all of our students. I'd like it to be exciting. I think that we need to be doing that with our young people, but we also, if you think about it, as people shift jobs as they do during the course of their careers now, the next job they get is going to require more math, science, technology know-how than the job they had before. We're going to need to be doing more offerings for lifelong learning that are engaging and welcoming to all people.
And how do we do that?
It's going to take partnership. I mean, I think it's really exciting that the administration now has named a Council on the American Worker. And I think they had a meeting even just last week, and they're looking at how to empower the workforce throughout the length of someone's career to be able to have the skills that lead to satisfying and impactful jobs. That's one part. But there's also lots of partnership that's happening on the education level. I mean, I'm very excited to be going to visit Dakota State University, frankly. I think that the work that's being done there, so first of all, Dakota State University President Yosie Marie Griffiths is just an amazing leader. And during the time that we overlapped on the National Science Board, I watched her transform how the board fulfilled its oversight responsibility of the National Science Foundation. And then it's so incredible to see what she's accomplished at DSU in a short amount of time as she positions the university as one of the most technologically advanced in the Midwest. And I'm fascinated to see at DSU the combination of programs that are there from, you know, bachelor's degrees, graduate degrees, but associate's degrees. There's so much diversity in what is offered and so much capability to provide good learning, not only for the people of South Dakota, but for all the students from that it draws from wherever.
Talk a little bit about innovation and research, and how do you help people come up with those ideas, or how do those ideas get developed so there is more innovation and more research happening and more creativity in science and math?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think as we sit on the National Science Foundation and the National Science Board, we can't determine a priori which fields or which research is going to yield the most transformative discovery. We create a portfolio by investing in the best ideas that come to us in all areas of science and engineering and STEM education, combining support for core research in all the fields of science with interdisciplinary initiatives. I think one thing that we are doing right now to drive forward innovation is some of the newer initiatives at the foundation, including the 10 big ideas and the convergence accelerators. You know, I think that in this world of converging disciplines and interdisciplinary and interdependencies, I guess, would say, between fields of research, having these big ideas and these convergence accelerators just represents a unique opportunity, positioning the nation at the cutting edge of global science and engineering leadership, as well as fueling basic research that advances U.S. prosperity and security.
Is there global cooperation in innovation and research, or is it competition?
I think it's a combination of both, and it's actually fascinating to me that the National Science Board, by statute, every 2 years, produces something that's called the Science and Engineering Indicators Report. Mm-hmm. And historically, it's been due on January 15th of even-numbered years. I think as we get to the more digital age, yes, a report will be delivered then, but there's much more digital content that will be released continuously. But if you look at that report, it's really talking about the state of the United States science in a global context. And it's fascinating to see what our most recent report, 2018, showed. Certainly, the U.S. is a major global influence in science and technology. And yet the world is much more multipolar. We're seeing other countries seeing the benefits of investing in research and education, following the example that the U.S. has set. And so the world of science and engineering historically centered around the U.S., Western Europe, and Japan, but now developing economies, particularly China and other economies in the Asia-Pacific region, are just emerging as major S&E players. And these trends are expected to continue. And it's great for the world, actually, because the more people that are doing innovative science and engineering and solving problems in the world, the better for all of us. But I think what you asked earlier, and I think is true, is that sometimes we work in collaboration to great effect, helping the world, certainly creating economic growth and job creation, but also helping the world solve problems. But there can be areas in which it's competitive, and it's more competitive. So I think that's something that various studies are trying to wrestle with right now.
So when you see that there's growth in all areas across the world in this indicators report, does that give you hope that we're on the right track?
Absolutely. I think that we have so many key issues that we need to look at right now in the world. Certainly, we need to look at food, water, energy security. We need to look at, it's limitless, the number of issues that science and engineering research can help impact positively. So I think it's great to see, and it's great to see in our country that, you know, the result of recent polls show that there's strong bipartisan support for federal funding of science and technology, and also that there's widespread agreement across among the voters in this country that science and technology research is important to meeting the needs of our citizens, including maintaining our national security, having the high-quality health care and a world-class education system, and developing a highly skilled workforce. It's great to see that consensus.
I was kind of struck as I was clicking through this report that, you know, even the fourth grade math scores were listed from the standardized tests. I mean, you really take a comprehensive look at where we're at.
Absolutely. The charge for this report is actually rather huge. It's looking at soup to nuts, if you will. You know, we're trying to look at the entire tapestry of what constitutes our mathematics, science, engineering, education associated with the same, all the way up to what innovation there is. There's information there on companies and patents and innovation across the board. You know, it's interesting. You know, if you look at things like MRI scans and nanotechnology or Google, barcodes, tissue engineering, all of these things are advances that, if you have to back up where they came from, they certainly came from innovators that had really good training. They then came from funded research, and then the ones I just mentioned, they all had NSF funding to kick off. And then they have to get sustained through various levels of funding to being commercialized, to being out there and impacting our lives. It takes many years.
Right, right. From idea to actual, even a business model or a result even in a test. And I'm wondering the political landscape, and is there bipartisan support for science and math and STEM, and if not, or if so, I mean, is the science community united in their response?
I think there's bipartisan support. I think that, you know, they're just wonderful, wonderful people in Congress and the administration working together to try to advance science, engineering, and the future of these fields and their impacts. I think that's great. I think that certainly in the conversations that I'm fortunate enough to have with people in Congress, there's real enthusiasm for what is possible, and there's strong support from my perspective in the National Science Foundation and the work that it supports and fosters.
And would you say that the field of ethics is keeping up with science improvements and technology?
Ethics is really, really important. You know, I'm fascinated. One of my colleagues here at Tufts has two PhDs, one in computer science and one in philosophy. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's just a wonderful combination because there's a lot to think about the ethical concerns of, you know, when you think of the privacy area, you know, how do you incorporate ethics into your innovation? I think it's important. I think that's why it's really important that at the National Science Foundation that we have a strong Directorate of Social and Behavioral and Economic Sciences that partners with our mathematical and physical sciences or computer and information science and engineering or geo. You know, I could go through the various different components, but that the National Science Foundation certainly is funding research across all the areas of science, engineering, social science that interleave with each other and together form the tapestry of the science that we need for the country.
What area would you steer a young person who says, I love all things STEM, what should I focus on, that you would say this is where we're most underserved or this has the greatest area for potential growth? Where would you direct a young person to really focus right now?
Well, first of all, I think that young person needs to follow her or his passion because we need to do things that we're passionate about. So that's number one. And then I would have to say that in each and every area, there are key questions that need addressing. You know, it's impossible to single out one, but probably showing a little bit of my bias as a computer scientist, I actually think that at this point, computational thinking affects almost every discipline there is. You know, certainly where I am, the number of people doing double majors in computer science and music has grown. Computational music is a thing, as well as computational economics or computational whatever. But even if computation itself doesn't end up being the main driver of whatever that person does, having that ability to think computationally is key to so much of our world today that I would certainly not advise anyone to neglect that.
Explain that computational thinking just a little bit more.
Well, if you think about it, just in terms of whatever fields we are looking at, just think about how the massive amounts of data that's produced now. It can be overwhelming, actually. You try to look something up and you can see much, much, much more data than you would have before. Just knowing how to extract information from the data. I mean, we can call that data science, too, but it's important for us to be able to navigate in this world where so much more information is at our fingertips at any point, and how do you prune through, go through that data and extract what's most significant? That itself is a skill set, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I bet you have to do that all the time.
you have to twist the cube and look at things from multiple areas for sure. All right, Diane Suvain, I want to thank you very much for taking time and being on the program today.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and I'm certainly very much looking forward to being in South Dakota next week. I think this research symposium is going to be wonderful, and we're also having our first NSB listening session for our new vision project, where we're trying to look at what should NSF look like and what are our principles for the 10 years between now and 2030, and the first listening session will be in South Dakota next week also.
And that's going, do you know when that is? What day? Is that Thursday also?
That's on Wednesday, and that's a small group where the NSB Vice Chair, Ellen Ochoa, and NSB Committee on Strategy Chair, Roger Beachy, will facilitate a session together with DSU President, Dr. Griffiths, and inviting deans and vice provosts and provosts from a number of South Dakota institutions to talk about what will the global system of fundamental S&E research look like over the next 10 to 20 years? And what will U.S. leadership look like? And what's a good balance between disciplinarity and interdisciplinarity? I think they're going to have a lovely conversation.
And there is a lot happening with innovation and science and technology in South Dakota. I think you'll be pleased to learn of all the things that are going on here.
We are very much looking forward to it.